sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again, or call your operator to help you. This is a recording.
70521.
Nous avons de la difficulté à établir la communication que vous avez demandée. Veuillez vérifier le numéro et composer de nouveau, ou demander l'aide du téléphoniste. Ce message est enregistré. 70521.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
And out in Signal Land, we have Alex.
You do indeed. Good evening.
Usually we have more people, but tonight this is it. This is all you got. And to make it even more fun, we're going to actually try to do overtime at 8 o'clock on YouTube. So, boy, that'll be fun, because Gila's not here, and she runs all the controls, so it's basically going to be a free-for-all, out-of-control YouTube experience for everybody at 8 o'clock. But right now, it's BAI time, and we're going to talk about technology and various other things that might overshadow technology at the moment. For instance, the conditions that we're currently living under. Oh, my goodness. We are in not only a heat wave, but a smoke wave. We're getting all this smoky air coming over from Canada because of the annual wildfire ritual that we as humans now have. It's really kind of spooky. If you look outside, you see it recently, Kyle?
Absolutely. All day the light has been this peachy orange hue and just really quite thick and hard to breathe. They've been in advising people to stay inside. The measurements, I believe, are pretty high. The scale's like 0 to 500, and in some areas it's over 200, I believe.
I just saw you outside, though.
Yeah, I had a dust mask on for
okay,
whatever.
You did have a mask on.
I don't think it was that helpful, but I mean, yeah, I was doing a little bit of work that had to be done, but for only a brief period, and that was, you know, with some water waiting for me.
I was banging on the window shouting, but I imagine it was completely silent outside. But yes, don't go outside, folks, unless you have to. And if you do go outside, try to not breathe into. I can't believe I have to say these things, but it's true. It's not good for you. Wear a mask if you have to. Don't worry about right-wingers mocking you for wearing a mask outside. The air is polluted right now, and it's dangerous to breathe in. That's just a fact.
Especially if you're at risk. So definitely look out for one another.
Yeah, of course, we're talking about the northeast area, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, you're fine. Don't worry about it. No, I'm kidding. Of course you have to worry in New Jersey.
No, but tri-state area, New England, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Boston. Oh, my God. And, of course, Canada, where the fires are to start with. But don't think we won't have fires here in the States.
Wouldn't it be great if we had like stories about that from from Canada? We're just not informed, right?
Stories about what?
Well, the coverage. You know, you don't see local news about it until the winds pick up and it hits our
Well, because we don't
skies.
Care until we can't breathe, and all of a sudden everything is getting very dim, and people are asking,
that's
hey,
what's
going on, you know?
And that's what I'm suggesting we might, you know, work on.
This could be breaking news to a lot of people who thought maybe, you know, this was end times arriving. And no, they're not arriving. That's tomorrow when Trump gives his speech. But regardless, we'll get to that. Alex, where are you right now, and are you affected by this weirdness?
I honestly don't even know what you guys are talking about. I mean, I feel like the air quality is just so ordinarily bad in Manhattan. I'm sitting outside in Manhattan. I don't sense or feel anything different or any danger. So I don't know. Maybe it's different out where you are, but I feel like it's just generally muggy. It definitely looks a little ominous outside, maybe a little bit pink, but it's, you know, we just had a massive downpour of rain for, I don't know, the last hour or so. So I don't know. I'm out here. I'm going to brave it for the next 2 hours.
Well, we don't know what this rain is that you're speaking of, because it's dry here, just kind of dim.
I did hear reports from our control room before the show that there were some thunderstorms in Manhattan, which I don't know if that was.
Well, we're out on Long Island. We're out to the east, so it's a little different.
Well,
and New England is very different as well. It's just everybody is going through something.
Yeah, the winds have picked up, so I think a lot of that stuff's moving around those systems.
And who knows? Who knows by the end of this broadcast the shape that we'll be in? So, you know, take heed, be careful. These are weird times.
Plenty of hazards.
And it's hot, too. You might hear a fan in the background. We got fed up, you know. We usually do the show without air conditioning, without any kind of fan, but it's just, you know, there's no air. It's stagnant. It's hot. And maybe you can't even hear the fan, so that would be nice, too. We have a show to do. We have things to talk about. And one of those things is something that I'm kind of happy about. New York has become the first U.S. state as of yesterday to halt construction of large new data centers, imposing a one-year moratorium as concerns grow that the facilities driving the artificial intelligence boom are raising power costs, straining water supplies, and burdening local communities. Yeah, and that moratorium positions New York at the forefront of a growing national debate over how to manage the infrastructure needed to support AI. While technology companies are racing to build new data centers, lawmakers and regulators in dozens of states are weighing measures to limit their effect on electricity grids, utility bills, and local communities. It's incredible that these things are popping up everywhere, and they're raising the cost of electricity for people who live there, not lowering. You know, if they were lowering the cost, then you'd have an honest debate as to, hey, is it a good idea to do this? And what about that artificial intelligence, etc.? But now, you know, it basically is a blight on so many levels. It's really a no-brainer to say no more of this. We've had enough. Governor Hochul said that as data center development threatens to hike up utility bills, deplete our natural resources, and create uncertainty for New Yorkers, it's my responsibility to take action and lead. The construction ban will apply to data centers that use 50 megawatts or more of power. That's according to officials in the governor's office. Now, of course, today, Trump weighed in on this. He's not happy. I love it when he gets angry. It's so funny. He slammed Governor Hochul's new data center moratorium, saying in a Truth Social post that the state should change its policy immediately, all caps, after it became the first in the U.S. to impose a ban of its kind. One of the biggest driving forces, capitalized, in the future, I'm not going to say what's capitalized. Somebody has to study his mind and figure out why he capitalizes certain words. One of the biggest driving forces in the future for jobs are data centers. They are big, strong, bold, and money machines for the state in which they are built. Governor Kathy Hochul, for political reasons, has terminated all data centers being built or be built in New York State. That's what it says. Or to be built. Oh, I'm sorry. That was my mistake. I didn't see the two. I'm sorry. Okay. Or to be built in New York State. So the new state executive order signed by the governor yesterday, bars for up to a year the construction of large-scale data centers that use 50 or more megawatts of power, as mentioned. Trump wrote Wednesday, New York State has made a terrible decision, but you know what? I'm good with it. I'm good living with that. Any thoughts, comments? No interest whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in here. I mean, I think there's a lot of benefits to this, but you know, there's also you have to think about some of the downsides too. I mean, look, they want to run through the benefits. They're doing things that protect the grid, protect electrical consumption, protect the consumer. There's environmental and water impacts, obviously, from all these data centers, these hyperwatt data centers that are popping up everywhere. I think a moratorium for at least a short time is a good thing because it allows some form of political catch-up to happen here and a regulatory catch-up, because we don't necessarily know what all the implications are of all these data centers, especially on with respect to their impacts on the environment and specifically impacts on wildlife. These kind of low humming noises and things that are bothering people, bothering wildlife, I think are kind of terrible. But on the other hand, you know how I like to play the devil's advocate here.
Yeah, you're going to be a real devil here. I like to hear what's after that but.
But you have to think about the economic impact here, right? And everybody claims, I know what you're thinking already, but it doesn't create jobs. These things don't create jobs. But there is going to be, excuse me, a loss of investment in New York. You know, people are going to see New York as closed for business in some respects with respect to data centers. And I'm not saying that the cons outweigh the pros here. I think the pros certainly outweigh the cons. But there's a risk, too, if we don't build these things, that another country, perhaps a hostile foreign power, you know, look, Trump, I'm not saying he's right, but, you know, even a stop clock is right twice a day.
That's saying he's right. That's saying he's right.
No, I'm not saying he's right. But he does have valid points, though, that we do want American leadership when it comes to the forefront of AI. We don't want China being at the forefront of AI. We want American companies leading the charge here. Well, I mean, I think that benefits everybody.
Why can't American leadership be doing it sanely and not destroying people's bank accounts and backyards and environment and all that? You know, you mentioned the humming. I didn't even mention the humming, but yeah, that's another issue. Depleting the water supply, raising utility costs, and destroying the landscape as well. You know, maybe we can lead in not doing that and using all of these resources for something a little bit more productive. Who is it who's benefiting from AI in the first place? You know, I don't think average people benefit very much from that. I think billionaires, people who are already billionaires, are benefiting like crazy. And, you know, we have our first trillionaire. It's insane. There needs to be some kind of, a slowing down so we can gauge where we're going and where we want to go. Because right now, I don't feel like any of us have a say in it.
Well, that you bring up a good point, though. And here's, I think, another con to this. I think the governor doing this and issuing a statewide moratorium banning the construction of new data centers that are over a certain threshold gives us right now this sort of one-size-fits-all approach to the ban here. And there's some unintended consequences, I think, of this one-size-fits-all approach. You know, namely, exactly what you just said, Emmanuel, that people should be making their own decisions about this. And I think a statewide ban overrides local decision-making about this. There may be some local communities that want data centers that are so impoverished that they need these types of jobs, they want the types of construction, they need that type of economic incentive and that investment in their local communities. Some people may want this, and other people do not.
Yeah, of course, some people are going to want it. It doesn't make it right because some people want it, you know?
But they should have the right to choose it.
Well, do they have the right to destroy the landscape and build?
Absolutely.
They do. Okay,
they absolutely do. If they own it, they absolutely do.
I don't believe that. I really don't believe. I believe you have a responsibility to do something that is environmentally correct and does not destroy the landscape and is somewhat thoughtful of your neighbors and society in general. You don't just get to do whatever you want.
Think about that. Would the island of Manhattan look the way it is if we carried that mentality forward for the last several hundred
it
years?
It wouldn't look
I mean,
the
you
way
need
it
to
is.
Destroy the environment.
If there were no regulations whatsoever, I guarantee you it wouldn't look the way it is right now. Kyle, you had something. Go ahead.
Well, I think, like, the statewide thing is in service of actually coming up with some really thoughtful and forward-thinking policy around it. I mean, it's necessary under the circumstances so that it doesn't become this huge, huge land grab. That really, as Trump, you read in that that blurb, talks about them as a sort of a money machine, and you rightly point out that it's really a money machine for, okay, yeah, he might say the states, but that's sort of a payoff to exploit those communities that Alex is talking about in service of something that they can become gatekeepers for and are propping up, and that they want the general public to have a sort of reliance on as we move into the future. And I would take issue, or I would dispute the point about a sort of arms race or something with foreign actors. I think that might be a worthwhile thing as a nation state from that vantage might want, but China itself is having its own issues with the fallout from automation and unemployment and sort of retooling and so forth in their own striving for this achievement of a sort of general intelligence and future automation dominance. And I think at what cost? And Alex is saying there's a risk. Sure, it's a tiny, I think, a smaller risk than if what these actors are to gain in achieving their ends over, above, and beyond the law and the human rights, the environmental law, general natural, shall we say, Alex? Natural law? Can we go there? You want to get really philosophical? I mean, what? How much of a money machine do these very few? It's let's say a consolidating money machine, a money machine that simply consolidates wealth further and impoverishes the wider public really to death, and you're saying that we risk the spoils going to those agents in this society versus everyone else and all other creatures. Let's not forget the sort of animal industrial fallout here.
Can I just guys jump in here and remind you both that it's a 1 year moratorium, right? That's 1 year to think this through and decide what your next step is going to be. It's not a permanent ban or anything like that. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Look, and I think the moratorium is a good thing. I'm just arguing both sides of the issue here. But I think, Kyle, you hit the nail on the head here when you're talking about, look, this give us time to pause and to think about this. It's a 1 year ban, right? So I think that regulatory catch up where we can think about how we want to do this more responsibly in a way that doesn't affect wildlife, doesn't affect humans nearly as invasively as it has been doing now, I think is great. And it's not, this isn't like a fracture that's going to be forever, right? So this is, you know, a 1 year break with data centers. It's more of like a conchoidal fracture, you know, when you break a rock or something and it breaks in half and then you're like, oh, wow, there's like a smooth edge in there. And that actually looks really nice. That's a kind of a benefit here. I think that's what we could see from this break happening. I think we will end up with something better, something smoother, and something you know, a lot more beneficial.
Yeah, and Alex, I think also the what you're saying is it's not to be discounted that there is a sort of leading by example thing here with New York State. As you say, it's this really superb example of my, you know, of empire, of what the economic engine of our nation can build. So yeah, we don't want that to necessarily become something that can't match the kinds of innovation that is the state of the art around the world. But I think we need to understand what we're serving, and I would say especially the comparison to other countries. It's really, there's so many dual uses for this that are really proxies for weaponry and modern warfare and the kind of asymmetrics and remote attacks and location and sort of other future technologies with in the integration of these kinds of intelligent platforms and thinking systems, we got to be really careful with that too, because it's much more than just a general computer being used to calculate things. It's something that you're sort of setting free with payloads and things, and that itself, I think, can't be lost in this, the dual use. And that's, I think, partly what you're concerned about, is that are we going to be then reliant if we don't have the ability to do this stuff? But we got to do it in a way that we can maintain.
Well, you know, we seem to be coming back to the theme of, you know, because you own something, does that give you the right to do something without regard for other people? We're going to be hearing a lot more about this story that really affects, it could affect everybody on the planet. The FCC has waded into this, and despite a flood of objections, they have approved a startup's plan to launch a controversial satellite that will use, this just sounds so bad, it will use a giant mirror to reflect sunlight to Earth after dark. Yeah, did they ever get annoyed when it gets dark outside? Well, we might have a solution for you, a giant mirror in space that's going to direct the sun right back at you. Yeah, goodbye, nightfall. Hello, 24-hour light. That's what we all want. On Thursday, the FCC granted California-based Reflect Orbital permission. First of all, just that name alone, they should be disqualified for lack of imagination. Reflect Orbital, wow. Granted them permission to launch and operate the satellite in low Earth orbit using the requested radio spectrum. The reflected light from the satellite is supposed to span an area about 3 miles wide on the ground. Doesn't sound so bad now, but believe me, the technology will improve. Now, this approval is only for one satellite, dubbed Arendelle 1, which is meant to test Reflect Orbital's technology for shining sunlight back to Earth. The satellite will boast a steerable thin-film reflector measuring about 60 feet by 60 feet, with the goal of powering solar farms at night. Oh yeah, blame solar power for this. Or illuminating disaster-struck areas after dark to help rescue teams. Yeah, you know, you're looking for a lost child or something. Who wouldn't say turn on the light so we can see where they've wandered off to? But, you know, you develop this a little bit more, and all of a sudden you're looking for dissidents who are trying to escape a fascist government, or tracking down refugees in the forest, or who knows what. Or other people get their hands on the technology and just use it at their, you know, whims. I don't know. Any thoughts on this? Is this something that we should be stepping in and saying, no, we don't want this, and do we have the right to even stop it?
I mean, this seems totally insane to me. It also sounds like a headline that somebody created for The Onion, as opposed to something actually happening over at the FCC. I mean, the FCC, like, these are people that are nervous about things like community Wi-Fi, yet somehow they're cool with reflecting sunlight onto Earth from space. I don't understand that.
Alex, let me just reassure you, this is not The Onion. This came from PCMag.com.
PCMag, that bastion of truth and accuracy. I know, it's incredible. But I mean, it also sounds very Bond villain-like. You know, are these people like cosplaying as James Bond villain types? I mean,
look at who's running the country. Look at who's running businesses. We're living in a James Bond film. For God's sake, they're evil personified. You know, they've got the mustaches and the sunglasses and the cats and all that. If this were a James Bond film, it wouldn't be a very good one.
I mean, we can't get fiber to most public housing, but we can reroute sunlight from space, right? I mean, it's easier now to reroute sunlight from space and get approval to do that than we can to get fiber to public housing and make sure we're healing the digital divide. I mean, this sounds like a horrific idea, the environmental impact of which I think has not been studied at all, or if it has been studied, it's probably been studied in some kind of partial slanted manner. It seems kind of insane. On the other hand, I do have to say, it does sound kind of cool, too. I mean, I'd like to see how this works, like, from an engineering perspective.
Well, pick a different planet. Neat. Test it on a different planet, not ours. You know?
I don't know. I mean, it should be something that it seems like it really needs to be extremely heavily regulated because of the the potential for function creep, as you mentioned, Emmanuel, abuse and environmental impact from this could be absolutely disastrous.
Think about countries that go to war a lot, like our country, for instance. We go to war an awful lot, lighting up the country that we happen to be invading this week. You know, as if dropping bombs isn't enough, we can light them up and there's no place to hide. Make life a living hell. And, you know, mess up your circadian rhythms. Did I get that right? That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. Well, the FCC, and we're not criticizing the FCC. We know what happens if you criticize the FCC over the public airwaves. So we're not doing that. We're just quoting them. The Communications Act states that it is the policy of the United States to encourage the provision of new technologies and services to the public. So that's the justification for doing something like this. I don't know. We'll see what that winds up going, but it sure doesn't. It doesn't seem like a very well thought out idea. Right now, it's a small area. Guarantee you, it's going to get much, much bigger. Go ahead, Alex.
Can I share just a bit of news that came in for me about 2 hours ago?
Well, it's hardly late breaking, but as long as it's not the score of the game. I know the score of the game, but our listeners might not. So if that's the breaking news, don't share that.
No, it's not. That wouldn't have nothing to do with me. So I wanted to tell you, yesterday I was in court and arguing against the Department of Justice on a habeas case. And about 2 hours ago, Judge Merchant from the Eastern District of New York in Brooklyn issued her order, and I have just won my sixth habeas petition, for writ of habeas corpus on behalf of an ICE detainee. And this time we won him an immigration hearing, a bond. And this was an hour-long argument yesterday in federal court against the Department of Justice, arguing about due process and the place of the Fifth Amendment in the detention of immigrants. And it was a very tense and hard-fought battle. And I'll tell you, the day before, I actually had tickets to go to the Scottolites here in the city and see the Scottolites. So my wife got me tickets to see the Scottolites months ago. And we didn't go because I felt like I needed to prepare more for this oral argument yesterday. So we had missed out on seeing the Scottolites over at City Winery, in favor of staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning studying case law. But it paid off because I really think I mopped the floor yesterday with the Department of Justice lawyers that were on the other side, made them look ridiculous. And now I'm 6-0. This is the sixth one.
I was going to ask if you were undefeated. I just want to say, though, if there's any members of the Scatolites or their booking crew or anything like that listening, please consider coming back and putting on maybe just one song for Alex outside. That'd be nice.
That'd be awesome.
Or, send them an email saying, well done. But yes, Alex, I think we all owe you a debt of gratitude for that. And great that you're undefeated. That's so cool.
Undefeated. And this one was a great one. And we got the judge issued a wonderfully long opinion that found for us. And it was great to be able, basically what the government was arguing was, well, we can do this because Congress told us we can do it. And the Department of Justice took the position that this case Matthews didn't apply, which is the seminal case about how you weigh due process considerations when somebody's going to be detained. And I literally had to tell the judge that I was taken aback when the Department of Justice said, well, we just think that case doesn't apply because Congress says you have to detain the immigrant. I said, well, this is the whole reason we have the Constitution. Congress can say you have to do whatever you want to do, but Congress cannot command that which the Fifth Amendment forbids. That's why we have courts. That's why we have the Constitution. And I'm so happy to see that the Constitution prevailed here. We were right. It's just, sometimes you just have to boil it down to very, very simple concepts, and you win.
Wow. You know, ICE has been in the news quite a bit recently, and it's awful, as always. I actually praised Trump on our other radio show yesterday, saying that he did the right thing by saying no more traffic stops until we figure this out. And boy, was I stupid, because of course it turned out he had nothing to do with that. And today he said, of course we want to have more traffic stops. We want to, shoot as many people as possible if we have to. I have to stop being so trusting. I have to stop giving credit where it's not due, because it certainly is not due there. But congratulations, Alex, on one small victory against this madness that we're living through.
Yeah, we'll keep them coming. Yeah. I'm going to keep filing. We're going to keep fighting. So thank you. Glad to share that news.
All right. Now, on the subject of football, we're not going to give out the score. I know the score. I don't know if anybody else does, about Argentina versus England earlier today in the World Cup. But we do have a football-related story. By the way, before I get into the football-related story, you remember a couple of weeks ago, Alex, you were out in Little Senegal, uptown?
Yeah, Petit Senegal, yep, yeah. Over on 116th Street.
And you had texted me asking if I wanted you to do the show from there with all the craziness going on as people were watching
That's
the
right.
game between Senegal
yes.
and Belgium. I had watched a little bit of the game. I didn't know how it ended, so I didn't want to be part of that. So I just sent you a very terse message saying, just get a good signal. And then you texted me back. And I ignored that text. I did, because I just had a feeling, that you were going to say something I didn't want to hear. And then we did the show, and we spent the entire hour not giving me the information. I was reading into, you're back at your house. So you left Little Senegal, which means that Senegal must have lost. And you said, no, I had a different engagement. I had to leave anyway. I never quite believed that. But the thing is, I was right in not reading your message. Because can I just read this message, what you sent to me right after?
I guess. Go ahead.
Boy. okay. this was exactly what I was afraid of. Hang on one second. Now I lost my place.
And I have to say, during that show, I was wondering why you didn't know what was going on. I just assumed that you didn't read my message. So,
So you text me saying, never mind, not worth it. Belgium scored two goals in the last five and tied it up. Ended 2-2. The atmosphere is quite dismal and defeated. You know, if I had asked you to come out and give a sports report of how the game ended, you could not have done a better job than
that. Yeah, that's like half a post-game show.
You told me everything that happened in the game. So,
I did, but that wasn't the ending score, though. That was not the ending score.
That's true, because they
lost. Belgium won.
Yeah, I know Belgium won, but you said atmosphere is quite dismal and defeated. Actually, you're right. You didn't say they won. Did you?
I didn't say they won.
Did you leave when they were tied?
I left when they were tied because I had to get back down to do the radio show and for something else. But
You were telling the truth.
I was telling the truth at that time. Yeah, I was telling the truth. But it was obvious to me that you didn't read my text message when we were doing the show, because I didn't think that you were feigning ignorance. I knew you were truly ignorant.
I don't feign ignorance. It's the real thing when you see that. Absolutely. And I read that message yesterday. So you sent it 2 weeks ago. I didn't get to it till yesterday. But many times I just avoid things I don't want to hear. So now on the subject, though, of the World Cup, it's a pretty well-known fact that Egypt were robbed, especially in the game against Argentina. And hackers from Egypt sent unauthorized emails from Argentinian accounts, AFA accounts, is that what that is? Accusing referees of corrupt decisions in Argentina's 3-2 win over Egypt. The attackers claim to have stolen AFA's database, including emails, passwords, IDs, and phone numbers, raising phishing and identity theft risks. The refereeing controversy, Egypt lodged a formal complaint over disallowed goals and missed penalties, with FIFA defending the integrity of officiating amid fan uproar. Reports from Argentine and international media state that the Argentine Football Association, that's AFA, was targeted in a cyber attack traced to Egyptian origins. Unauthorized emails sent from AFA accounts claimed Argentina's World Cup last 16 win over Egypt was secured through corrupt refereeing decisions. An Egyptian hacker group claimed responsibility and allegedly offered stolen AFA data, including emails, IP addresses, the things we mentioned before, on online forums. The messages also praised Egypt's performance and included some politically charged language. So, yeah, the fun continues off the playing field, and the fans take this very seriously. So, Yeah, that's why we're careful what we say. We don't give out too much information because it might not be known by everybody. We have a letter that I'd like to share. You can write your letters to Off the Hook, OTH at 2600.com. Dear Off the Hook crew, Kyle and Gila's comments last week regarding amateur radio operators are unfortunately true. A lot of the hobby feels gatekept by self-proclaimed, quote-unquote, real hams. Yeah, if you like a digital mode, they claim it's not real ham radio because a computer is involved. If you have the same license class, theirs is better because Morse code proficiency was mandatory back then. They thumb their nose at your $25 Chinese radio and say you need a $2,500 Japanese one. I left my first club when those types, also the club's officers, compared my entire generation to a certain German dictator. Then, in the same breath, they don't know why the hobby is dying. Ham radio looks like a hobby for old, straight, white men with disposable income, but that's not true. A kid half my age just got back from activating Bouvet Island in the South Atlantic. An 8-year-old girl passed the entry-level exam. One club I'm in caters to LGBTQ plus members and allies, proving it's not radio waves that discriminate. That's to say nothing of the NYC resistor hams popping into the Emerald Pub after a long day of Hope Talks last year in Queens. I'm not discriminating either. There are plenty of open-minded, old, straight, white men who just want to talk about their cool microwave setups or something like that. I'm a few decades away from being one of those. Let the sad hams chat on 75 meters until the nurses take away their mics. Ham radio is well over a century old, but it's not dying. In fact, it can only improve from here. And that letter from Colin. Should I give out his call sign? He signed his call sign. Do people want me to do that? All right,
I think so.
W1DNS. That's actually kind of a cool call sign there.
That's an awesome call sign.
P.S. Amateur radio means we don't and can't do it for money. Compare that to professional radio operators like Don Imus or Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, neither one of which are working now, but I guess we're amateur too because we don't get paid. And I know many people are happy to call us amateurs, so that's fine. That's fine. But yeah, good comments there, good critique. It's important to say these things and to realize that the amateur radio community is a diverse one. A lot of people are interested in this. Just, you know, go to any gathering where they happen to be, and you'll see that for yourself. And it's great that Hope gets so many amateur radio participants. It's another part of the hacker world that we often don't think of as a hacker world, but putting together a rig, you know, getting something operating, figuring out the rules and regulations and making contact with people in other parts of the world, that's a good part of the hacker community.
Yeah, and I would just add that computers are involved in radio these days. I hate to break it to anybody, you know, amateur or otherwise. And I wouldn't buy that for a second from anyone. If you're using computers and you're integrating it with analog equipment and adapting things or converting things, you're hacking things together. You're making, you know, different things work. Your electrical and your signal path, your pathways or your whatever you're hobbying with, however you set yourself up, if it works for you, that's fine. And in professional radio, there are so many ways computers are helping, especially people not buying receivers or having receivers, the ability to stream and use computing and encoding algorithms and the IP network in general to get audio and content out is a crucial part of relevancy for the traditional terrestrial radio industry, AM, FM, all of that. So, yeah, I think you can use whatever electronics you want if you're experimenting a little bit, and especially if you want to become an amateur licensed ham or other kind of radio operator. Or if you're just helping out with like community projects or setting things up places or helping like with point to point links, there's a lot of crossover between microwave or like Wi-Fi setups, and sometimes those things are crucial to get signals to like you know, emergency transmission sites or paths that, you know, help in the event that a wired connection or a telephone connection or something else is unavailable. Like, that's all integrating these different skills. So that's how I think of it. And I think, you know, I've learned so much, and I don't even consider myself like anywhere close to an amateur. So yeah, it's that's all like labeling, and you just have to keep looking for groups that accept you. And it sounds like this person really did find their place and find a good crew.
Yeah. And gave back in a really positive way. Go ahead, Alex.
You know, as I said before, I'm really hopeful to finally, after many years, get my ham radio license this year at Hope at one of the exams that's going to be hosted there. Hopefully I will have enough time to study for it. I think my son, who's 13, also may be studying for this as well. And I think it would be super cool for him to be able to get his ham radio license. I was looking it up. There's actually no age restriction on who can have a ham radio license. I think people like as young as like 6 or 7 have had ham radio license. As long as you can pass the exam, mm-hmm. you can operate you know, a ham radio, which I think is super cool. And he's been really getting into radio as well. We have these GMRS radios that we use out in Pennsylvania when he's out fishing or something on the lake and kayaking. We had this crazy incident this past weekend where there was this massive snake at the end of our yard near where this lake is, this huge snake, about three or so feet long, I don't know, maybe 5-6 inches wide. And then the next day he got into the kayak, he's out there fishing, and I hear over the radio, you know, using the call signs that we use for each other, which I won't embarrass myself.
We'll find out what it is.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, exactly. But anyhow, he's calling out to me, radioing to me, you know, essentially, Daddy, do you copy? Do you copy? Do you copy? And it turns out that snake was in the kayak. He had to jump out of the kayak and abandon the kayak. And these other people on the lake had to get the snake out. But we were able to communicate through radio.
I thought there was going to be a kayak with a snake in it from now on. Yeah, how else would the snake have gotten out?
That's scary.
I mean, it was a crazy thing. Actually, some people in a paddle boat were able to help get the snake out of the kayak. But, you know, this sparked a real interest in learning about radios, learning about frequencies, learning about keying up, how radio works, how it can be used to communicate over distances. So he's really into it now. And I think that's all it takes sometimes is a little bit of an emergency with a snake to spark your interest in radio.
I think that's true of many, many. By the way, does anybody else hear Mr. Softy? Is that on your end, Alex?
I hear it, too. I don't know where the hell that's coming
from. Well, you're in the city, so it's likely it's out by you, right?
I don't hear it. So, I mean, I don't hear it. I hear it in my ears, but I don't hear it.
Kyle, do you think it's out here?
Yeah, it might be around the block or something. Is that where we're hearing you from?
I want an ice pop. Okay.
No, my actually, can we get empty, man?
No,
I got a wood.
Dude, they take credit cards.
I have
now.
A wood nickel.
I really need something icy today. Okay, Mr. Softy doesn't come around very often. All right, well, while we deal with that, maybe we can send one of the office staff out.
You know, I had one of their signature drinks. You turned me on to this. Black and white? I never had that.
Yeah, yeah.
I had
no
idea.
We can't advertise products of particular brands.
Well, you can
sufficient.
Get that anywhere.
That
you
way.
Can get that at the Frosty trucks, uh-huh. too, right? Anybody
oh,
will
no.
say that.
Alex, check to make sure that's not on your end, because it's driving us a little crazy out here. Speaking of violations...
I mean, I've been on mute, by the way, so it couldn't be on my end, because I've been on mute.
It's got to be here, then. All right. Well, we'll track this down.
Can you turn that down? It's making me think about it. I mean, you're telling me not to talk about it, but...
Uh-huh. Well, how do I turn down something that's outside?
Where is it?
That's what I've been asking. Look, we'll look into this after the show. Madison Square Garden, that's not over yet. Apparently, Madison Square Garden is not content to just keep track of people who work for lawyers' offices. Now they're keeping a list of gay celebrities who visit the venue. Not kidding. Madison Square Garden security may be even worse than you thought. The venue has come under scrutiny in the last year, even more than that, I think. After multiple exposés about its surveillance system, they've also drawn international attention for hosting Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's wedding, reportedly keeping a list of LGBTQ plus celebrities who might visit the venue with a specific label indicating their gender identity or sexual orientation. That's according to a Wired investigation. But, of course, Wired doesn't let you read their stories unless you pay them, so we had to get it somewhere else. Wired found an MSG database of venue VIPs affixed with labels that include a risk assessment that goes from flag, meaning low risk, alongside labels such as low risk for celebrities including Edie Falco, Tracy Morgan, Ben Stiller, and medium risk, such as rappers Jadakiss. And did I say it right?
Jadakiss.
Jadakiss. Okay, I'm sorry. And Fat Joe, rapper Lil Jon and DaBaby are reportedly considered high risk. I could have told you that. The scale often reflects whether a person has ever been publicly critical of venue owner and New York Knicks executive chairman James Dolan, otherwise known as the Jerk. Just trying to get on the list. Even Knicks superfan Fat Joe, who is a fan of Dolan, has allegedly been labeled as medium risk for his association with Jadakiss, who was critical of Dolan in 2020. So if you praise Dolan and then you hang out with somebody who once criticized him, that affects your score. It's like that Chinese social media thing going on.
They're in the same industry, like in the same genre. How are they not going to be somewhat... whatever. This is so petty.
It's worse than petty.
It's like a mean girl thing, like some clique, like rating people or like early Facebook or something. Like, come on. Get over yourself.
There are 39,539 entries in the database with names spanning the worlds of business, technology, media, politics, and sports. Many with no labels affixed. However, 93 entries on the list of celebrities are marked as LGBTQIA per the report. Celebrities who have received the label include Ricky Martin, Phoebe Bridgers, and Geese guitarist Emily Green, who is transgender. At least one bisexual attendee of Taylor Swift's MSG wedding, Ice Spice, is also included in the document as low risk per the report. I've never met James Dolan. I don't know the higher-up leadership at Madison Square Garden, but like there does seem to be a bit of a pattern here. Evan Greer, director of the digital rights group Fight for the Future, in fact, they'll be speaking at HOPE, told Wired they just seem overly interested in queer and trans people in their venue. Greer's comments reference an earlier report that Madison Square Garden security, under Dolan's leadership, allegedly tracked... This is really disturbing. They tracked a trans Knicks fan's every movement down to the second throughout the venue. And ultimately, the purported aim was to keep her separated from the Knicks players. Though the woman posed no threat per an employee, security allegedly compiled an 18-page dossier on her, which included times she scanned her ticket, used the elevator, hugged an usher, ordered drinks, and entered the women's bathroom, as well as when she exited 2 minutes and 5 seconds later. I don't know about you, but I find this to be really disturbing and a violation of so many rights, and they really need to feel the wrath of somebody or something for mistreating people. People who are giving James Dolan money whenever they walk through his doors. And this is how they are treated. It's disgusting. It really is awful. Alex, go ahead.
I mean, this seems to me like something that should potentially be investigated here. I mean, I think in the past, the New York Attorney General has sent letters to Madison Square Garden formally demanding that they give some kind of explanation with respect to its use of facial recognition technology, but they get away with a lot because they are a private venue. I think, though, that because they are on top of public infrastructure and kind of all surrounded by it as well, you know, as we said a few weeks ago, I think maybe there's an argument that they should be treated differently. But when they start acting in this really, really questionable way, in a really invasive way, I think the New York Attorney General is going to have to start demanding further answers to this, because it does seem like they are on the verge of violating our citizens' civil rights if they haven't done so already. But I think if you think about this in the context of what they've done in the past, their prior use of facial recognition to bar their own legal adversaries from certain events, this tracking is starting to look a lot more like some form of broader corporate ledger about who's queer, who's critical, who's politically useful, rather than some kind of narrowly tailored, transparent safety protocol that they're claiming.
Okay, well, Alex, we got to cut you off there. Unfortunately, we're out of time. OTH@2600.com is our email address. Join us on YouTube at 8 o'clock. Follow the link on channel 2600. Good night. Combativa.